Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH, streaming on the KTTH smartphone app. Alvin Bragg, Manhattan DA, just earned Donald Trump the nomination by indicting the former president in a nearly indescribably foolish and political decision. I say nearly indescribable because that's exactly what we'll be doing with What's Trending.
What's trending in Trumplandia?
Let's go over the monumentally foolish decision by Alvin Bragg. Foolish from a political perspective, but foolish from the perspective of what this actually means as it relates to the criminal justice system that we're told, ironically by folks on the left, is broken. Institutionally, there are aspects of the criminal justice system that are so broken, they have to be dismantled and then rebuilt. The side that takes that position is the side that right now is celebrating what is very clearly a political decision by Alvin Bragg. Clearly a political decision. Now, we knew this day was coming. Donald Trump said so just about a week and a half ago. He was off by about a week, a little more than a week. But he knew that this was going to come. It all stems from so-called hush money payment, the one that was made to Stormy Daniels ahead of the election to keep her quiet. He denies having any sexual relationship with her. There's also apparently a second woman who is subject to a hush money investigation that the federal government looked into. Again, the feds looked into both of these cases and said, yeah, no, there's nothing there. Nothing that we can prove. Only to then have Alvin Bragg come out, someone who campaigned. He campaigned on going after Donald Trump. And that's exactly what he ended up doing in this indictment today. He decided to push aside the rule of law, which he's been doing this entire time on the side of criminals, only to now go after former President Donald Trump. Understand that this is a DA who downgraded 52% of felonies to misdemeanors. This is a DA who said misdemeanors that might come with a carceral punishment should be rejected. A guy who offered a long list of crimes that that office was told, the prosecutors were told, we're not going to move forward with. That has led to a surge in crime in Manhattan. This is the guy who decided to step forward and say, yeah, we're going to go ahead and of the weakest cases that are being investigated against Donald Trump, we're going to move forward and not charge it as a misdemeanor, which there's no evidence to suggest occurred or enough to suggest you're going to get a guilty verdict, but we're going to upgrade it to a felony. And what he just did here, by turning Donald Trump into the first president in history to be indicted, he and the Democrats who were rooting this on, they just gave Donald Trump everything he needs to honestly say he's the victim of the politicization of the criminal justice system. And that is why what you've heard within the last couple weeks, a growing number of voices on the left in the legal community saying, this is not right. I don't like the guy, but this is not right. That's what they've been saying. They've been saying that for a reason. The progressives who are celebrating this decision, and I'm seeing quite a few of them right now on Twitter, they have a hatred for Donald Trump that is so deep, so significant, that they can't see the forest for the trees. Understand that when you give this kind of political power to abuse a system, to one ideological side, you do understand that it's going to be abused then by someone on the opposite ideological side. You have to understand that, right? Now, usually I give you this quote in the context of free speech. Imagine the power to censor in the hands of your worst enemy. The same exact logic applies here. Imagine the power to abuse the criminal justice system in the hands of your worst enemy. Now, for Donald Trump, he's going to be acquitted. Maybe there's some kind of settlement in which he pays a $500 fine. But he's not going to jail for this. He's not going to be found guilty. Unless there's further abuse within the jury selection, assuming he gets that far. But what does the Democrat Party think is going to happen to the president who was wrongly indicted and then acquitted? What do you think he's going to use out of that talking point about how he's the target? And he is. Talking point about the abuse of the system by the Democrats, which is exactly what's happening. This has significant implications, and I don't think folks on the left quite understand. Trey Gowdy, former congressman, former prosecutor, he was on Fox News moments ago.
We're not supposed to know what grand juries are doing. Ideally, this has been an exception. My position has not changed. I think it is the weakest of the four investigations. It's the wrong prosecutor, which you alluded to. It's the wrong fact pattern. You got statute of limitations issues. It's really a misdemeanor that put on a suit, and they want it to look like a felony. And I just, look, when our justice system becomes a political tool, then we are on thin ice as a republic, and I think we are increasingly heading in that direction.
100% correct. This is alarming. This should not be celebrated. As much as some people hate Donald Trump on the left and some on the right, this is not something to be celebrated. In fact, even if this was a legitimate indictment with a legitimate claim, it shouldn't be celebrated for what it means to the office of the presidency. He may not be in office, but he's still a former president, and you don't want to see something like this happen, regardless of one's political position. And for anyone who is foolish enough to think that this is going to prevent him from moving forward and running for president, you just guaranteed he's never going to drop out. Shannon Bream was on Fox.
The president was asked about this at CPAC a few weeks ago. Will you get out of the race if you're indicted? And he said, absolutely not. He predicted then and said it would probably help my numbers. Now, as this has been brewing and we've been waiting on some potential action by the Manhattan DA, we have seen him climb in the polls. Our own polls show that he's added several points to his lead among GOP primary voters over the last few weeks while we knew this was percolating. A lot of folks will say this is baked in. So now we wait to see what happens. I do think the president, I think Jesse's right. Nobody wants to be indicted, but I do think this president is very good, the former president, at making the best of whatever circumstances come his way.
One word response from Jim Jordan, congressman, chairman of the weaponization subcommittee. One word response to what happened just now. Simply said, outrageous. And he's 100% correct. So now what comes next? You have the president who I'm presuming it's going to take about a week or so. Will go into Manhattan. They'll have him seen walking into the DA's office or walking in to go get his fingerprints taken. Maybe there's going to be a mugshot that gets released and you're going to see it on every single screen and every single political advertisement from the left for the next 2 years. And it will be a constant reminder of the abuse of power that just took place. Again, keep in mind the federal prosecutors declined on this case. And as Trey Gowdy said on The Five today, when you're a prosecutor and you're looking at all of the different potential charges that you can level against a suspect or a defendant, you go with the one that is the easiest to prove, that you have the most evidence for. And what ends up happening now, because they went after to start the weakest case, you've got the other prosecutors, particularly in Georgia, who seem to believe that they have a strong case. They're probably looking at this and saying, oh, why did you just do this? Now, whatever comes next will seem equally as vacuous of a charge as the one in New York. It is remarkable that no one has thought this through. But when you are political, and this is true of both sides, when you're ideological, when you are married to your ideology, to an emotional hatred of a man, you end up having blinders on and you don't realize exactly the level of distrust you've now created in the criminal justice system. You don't think about the long-term impacts you're going to have. You're just singularly focused because your ideology that you're married to demands it. That's how much they hate Donald Trump. And just note all the bragging that will happen. I'm sure on MSNBC right now, they're going wild. They're celebrating. Because they don't understand what this will mean moving forward. You think this kind of abuse stops with Donald Trump? Do you think it's going to stop with just going after Republicans and Republicans are going to come out and say, oh, well, okay, you did it to us once. We're very forgiving people. No, it's going to be abused by Republicans against Democrats. I don't want to live in that criminal justice or with a criminal justice system like that. I certainly don't want to live in the criminal justice system. But it's going to go the other way, and it is maddening, absolutely maddening, that they think this is going to end well. And on top of that, you've got, and I made this point on Tucker Carlson this week, it almost seems like sometimes folks on the left are egging on Trump supporters to engage in violence or do something that would be a bad look. And I think you're going to see a lot of that right now. Trump might try to egg on some of it himself and calls for protests. If he's smart, politically, he won't go too far with that rhetoric. But you know that there's going to be some egging on and some crossed fingers hoping that Trump supporters end up getting violent at rallies or protests. Because then they can use that to go after Donald Trump even more. Now, we don't want that to happen. I definitely don't want that to happen. I hope you'll join me in that. The way anyone who is either a supporter of Donald Trump or just kind of understands why it's so important to remove politics from the criminal justice system and from these decisions, the only way we're going to win and push back is at the ballot box. Now, we have to amplify the voices making these points. Amplify the radio hosts, television hosts, writers who are making these points. Because more people have to understand what's going on. I don't think the vast majority of people, the average person, understands the implications of this. I think most people go about their day. They don't know really what's going on in the news outside of a very superficial understanding of what's going on maybe in their neighborhood. Maybe they've got one or two issues that they're really, really connected to and they learn a lot about. But most people have lives and families and they don't have the time to take deep dives into a lot of these stories. A lot of people aren't committed as you are to learning everything about what's going on. So it's now on us to make sure everyone does understand the implications of what just happened. And the implications we haven't even thought about yet. Because this is so unprecedented. This is so historical. This just changed the political landscape. I believe Katie Pavlich said that from town hall.
It will certainly change the GOP primary, but it will also change precedent. And Democrats talk a lot about precedent. Well, they just set one with this.
Yes, they did. And they're not going to be pleased with the end result. They are not going to be happy with what they just did long term. It might get them some short term happiness. Right now, they're feeling really good. The wise ones who, regardless of what they say politically, there are quite a few very smart Democrats who are in positions of power right now. They are feeling very, very anxious about what Alvin Bragg just did and what it means for this country. There are some people who think this means that Donald Trump is going to be easier to defeat. All I do is all I'll do is tell those people, go back to 2016. And tell me how you felt then. kind of felt, oh, wow, we got Donald Trump as the nominee. He's going to be really easy to beat. Did you hear that secretly recorded tape? The locker room talk? You hear that? Oh, he's going to be so easy to beat. This dude is corrupt. It didn't quite work out for you then. What makes you think turning him into a victim means you're going to be right this time around? Oh, he'll be in jail. No, he really won't. He's not going to jail for this. I know tomorrow on The View, Sonny Hostin will make the case that, oh, he's going to jail. They're going to have an actual celebration. They're going to go out of their way to celebrate, and cheer it on, and people have no clue what it is they're talking about, including the lawyer. We'll make all of these proclamations. Oh, he's going to jail. Finally. He's not going to jail. You don't go to jail for this. Even if it was a felony, he wasn't going to go to jail for this. So obviously stay tuned. Top of the hour, Fox News will have reports about what comes next and throughout the show and throughout the podcast. We will be paying attention to any developments. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Crime.
In a lot of ways, it was always bound to happen. A man chased a car thief, ended up killing him. That this hasn't happened, given the context of the crime surge and the lack of resources for police departments statewide, is something we should be grateful for. Because I keep wondering how many times people will take matters into their own hands because they know, unfortunately, they're not really going to get help due to a lack of resources and a general set of policies that have emboldened criminals all across the state of Washington. Now, the incident itself happened kind of a while ago. It happened in Federal Way. It was in October, early October. That's when police say Aaron Javon Mitchell tried to track down the driver of a stolen tow truck. Why? Because that driver in the stolen tow truck previously tried to steal Mitchell's SUV, and he was out for vengeance. So he ends up tracking this guy down, and they get into a bit of a pursuit that ended in gunshots. Mitchell, the purported victim of the attempted theft, he's the one who fired at the guy who allegedly stole the tow truck. Hits him, kills him. Now, the gun he owned was legal. He had a valid CPL, a concealed pistol license. But what he did afterwards was really what did him in, which is why now he's arrested and in jail. He apparently tried to cover it all up. Seattle Times says in the aftermath of the shooting, prosecutors suspect Mitchell torched the car he was driving during the chase, granted a friend power of attorney so he could clear out his apartment, and bailed on weekly classes he was required to take after suffering a workplace injury. Police do their investigation. They find this guy. He's now arrested. Now, all the details of this story aside, because what he did was obviously wrong on many levels. Everything that he did here was wrong. Pushing that aside for a moment, understand that you create an environment in which things like this will happen. When you decide to say, we're going to defund police, we're going to starve them of resources so that they cannot do investigations on their own into circumstances like the initial attempted robbery. When you pass laws that tell criminals, hey, guess what? All you have to do is hop in a vehicle and drive away, so long as it wasn't a violent crime you were involved in that a cop basically witnessed, we're not going to chase you. When you tell bad guys that, they're going to take you up on your offer. It's almost going to be seen as a dare. When you tell criminals, hey, don't worry, even if you are caught and arrested, probably won't prosecute, but if we do, we'll put you into some diversion program, a restorative justice program, where you don't even have to show up. Don't worry. And you won't suffer any consequences. Well, they're going to move forward with crimes. And when you've got victim after victim after victim, sometimes the same victim being hit multiple times by crime, they end up feeling like they have to take matters into their own hands. Now, I implore everyone to not do that unless you are quite literally in a situation in which your life is on the line. Don't play detective. I do that, but you can't. It's a detective rants. Don't try to play detective. Don't try to do this yourself. But I hope people who love these criminal justice reforms, I hope they understand we're lucky at this point that we don't have more of these situations unfolding. Because while I condemn everything he did, I understand why he did it. I understand why people say to themselves, I'm the only one who's going to be able to do anything about this so that I'm not victimized again, or so the person who victimized me actually suffers a consequence. They know that the cops can't do anything. It's not that they don't want to, but they know that cops are so dramatically limited all across the state because of their resources. I fear that more of this will happen. And this happened just tied to an attempted stolen SUV.
Well, this is kind of like an alternate ending in the Sean Kemp story, right?
Yep. That's
very similar.
That's what, at least according to the report so far, is what Sean Kemp was involved in. And again, looking at the video of Sean Kemp, that wasn't him using his firearm in the moment because he was threatened. He was quite far away from the guy that he supposedly tracked down who stole some of his goods. I believe it was an iPhone and maybe some other stuff. And Sean Kemp, in a crowded parking lot, ends up firing his weapon at the person who allegedly stole from him. More of that is going to occur. Right now, unfortunately, Democrats in the legislature don't seem very eager to fix their criminal justice reforms. In fact, later on in the show, we'll be talking with State Representative Jenny Graham, who will bring us up to speed on some of the backward decisions Democrats are making to try to, quote unquote, fix what they did. They're making matters worse. We'll explain how later on in the show. Every Thursday, we post a video on our social media channel, facebook.com/JasonRantsShow. I hope you'll go there. We get into why the media seems very hesitant to mention the gender identity of the shooter in the Nashville mass murder. That weekly video is brought to you by your local tax expert, Greg Nunn, and Nunn Better Tax Resolution. I hope you'll check it out. facebook.com/JasonRantsShow. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. I guess we have another reason to give MSNBC, CNN, New York Times an out to honestly cover the mass shooting in Nashville. You had a Democrat squad member going on an unhinged rant yesterday about guns. He did it in the hallways of Congress. He hopes, of course, all of us suffer from short-term memory loss, but he should be smart enough to know that we don't. He's trying to make the Nashville shooting another political fight about gun rights, which he does not believe in, the same way as people who have an understanding and respect for the Second Amendment. Now, there is a lot of room to disagree on policy, right? Policies we think are effective but potentially unconstitutional. Policies that are quite constitutional but totally ineffective. I'm pretty sure every single person who's listening to me right now doesn't want bad people to get guns, mentally ill people to get guns, and we don't want innocent people to die as a result of irresponsible gun use or accidental gun use. So we all have the same agenda. We have the same end goal, which is to protect as many people as possible. But the way we go about doing that, there's a little bit of a disagreement. Generally speaking, folks on the right say we believe in the Second Amendment. And while we understand why, particularly after a shooting, you might want more gun laws, but we've got gun laws on the books. We've got all the gun laws that you all have been calling for the most part, on the books. Why did this crime still occur? And by the way, what motivated this? Oh, no, we're not supposed to say anything. We're keeping that manifesto hidden. We have to focus on guns. Well, can we also focus on the shooter? No, definitely not. Why not? I think you know. We got to focus on the guns. And of course, this becomes political when you talk about law, when you talk about politicians, it ends up becoming political. And so Jamal Bowman, the congressman from New York, he decided to make a huge scene at the Capitol, all with the intent of bringing attention to his position and the Democrat position on guns. And he thinks, of course, he's going to get sympathetic coverage. And for the most part, he was right. He's being celebrated as this passionate hero, even though he comes off as seriously unhinged. And when Congressman Thomas Massie, the Republican from Kentucky, gets involved, it's not even a fair argument. It's not even a fair fight at that point. Thomas Massie is just so much smarter than Jamal Bowman, and he doesn't need to start a shouting match in order to win.
Children at all, cowards, pressure them, force them to respond to the question, why the hell won't you do anything to save America's children? And let them explain that all the way up until Election Day of 2024.
At least he's not even hiding the fact that he wants this to be a political issue. So kudos, I guess, for the honesty.
Let them explain it all the way up to Election Day of 2024. They're freaking cowards. They're gutless. They're not here. I'm talking about gun violence.
That's Tom Massie saying, what are you talking about? You sound like just a crazy dude who's yelling in the middle of the hallway.
Yeah, there's never been
I'm talking about gun violence.
In a school that allows teachers to
carry guns? More guns lead to more death. Look at the data. You're not looking at any data. You're carrying the water for the gun lobby. Look at the data. More guns lead to more deaths. States that have open carry laws have more death.
Did you know, and just write this down just so it's one of those life lessons or life hacks, I guess. When you're in the middle of a discussion or debate about whatever the topic is, what's your favorite color? All you have to do is shout your answer way louder than the person it is that you're talking to, and you will win that debate.
Yeah, Jamal Bowman was 100% right because he was the loudest.
He was loud. He didn't quite make any sense, and he wasn't really citing any data other than saying, look at the data. But because he was loud and he did it with this level of unhinged confidence, he clearly is winning this debate.
Are you listening to what I'm saying?
Yeah, we can't not listen to what you're saying because you're shouting at the top of your lungs. Yes, we're listening to what it is you're saying.
What caused their children to die? Nine-year-old children.
He cares so deeply about the children who are dying only when they die in ways that he can turn into a political fight. Because kids die daily. We had, here in Washington, we'll talk about it in the next hour, we had another kid die in Tacoma. Another teenager. Don't hear this level of passion from anyone on the left. Why is that? And it's odd because folks on the right, and I know this as a matter of fact because I'm one of the people who talks about this pretty much every week on Fox News. We usually say after a school shooting occurs and we get people like Jamal Bowman out there yelling about how they care about kids and they want to help end gun violence, they're not saying anything when in Chicago a bunch of kids end up getting murdered. They don't say anything. You haven't heard this level of passionate advocacy for gun laws and for the children after a weekend in which a 9-year-old is shot and killed in Chicago or in Atlanta or in D.C. Why is that? I'll wait for an answer. I'd love to know. Why is it that we don't get this kind of reaction every single day? Because there have been other instances in which more than one child died within a weekend in Chicago. None of that passion coming from Jamal Bowman. Again, I ask, why is that? Because that happens all the time. They've done nothing, And they don't want to bring attention to the fact that it happens all the time. But you've got a school shooting that does not happen all the time. If it did, you wouldn't be able to name the shooters, nor would you be able to name the schools in which it took place. It would just be another statistic. It would just be another shooting event. They treat all those kids and adults who are murdered every single week in Chicago, Detroit, Atlanta, D.C., L.A., Tacoma. They completely ignore it because to them, it's just another stat they can't really do anything with. It sometimes feels, as ghoulish as this sounds, that they wait for events like this, eagerly wait, so that they can jump up and down and make a big spectacle and tell us that they care. Meanwhile, you know who's talking about this every single day and every single week? Conservatives. I can't count the number of times I've specifically covered on the Faulkner Focus. I'm not even going across all the shows I've been on. Just one show where I talk about the victims of gun violence, usually in inner cities, in Chicago or Atlanta or D.C. I could not tell you how many times I've done that. Jamal Bowman doesn't do that. How many times on this show have we talked about teens who are killed? They're usually black. How often do we talk about it? Pretty much any time it happens. We keep track of these stories. And I talk about it in the same exact way, with the same exact passion, with the same exact disgust, whenever it occurs. Because unlike Jamal Bowman, folks on our side, when we discuss these issues, we want to actually do something and not just brand ourselves, not just earn some clicks on Twitter. And early on in this clip, Jamal Bowman goes and says something along the lines of, "You have control of the house and you're not doing anything." That's how he opens it. There are a bunch of different video clips that are on because everyone was there, basically pulled out their phones, which was the intent. But on some of the other clips, he starts off his conversation by saying about the Republicans, they have control of the House and they're not doing anything on gun control. He seems to forget that mere weeks ago, Democrats had control of the House, the Senate, and the White House. What did they do on gun control? Well, the Republicans got in the way. How'd that work? The Republicans got in the way. You had total control. Why didn't you just pass something? Because just like on immigration, there's no real interest from the left in passing anything because they know there's nothing more that they can do, that they can actually pass because they've got Democrats on their side who don't have this aversion to the Second Amendment like progressives in the Jamal Bowman camp. And so they just try to use these events for political power, to make some political cheap shot. They're using tragedy. They're using the blood of these kids. It's disturbing. And of course, it allows them to claim that anyone who supports the Second Amendment, anyone who doesn't seem to believe that it's wise to ban guns just willy-nilly, we get called out as monsters. Like we want to see children die. Eddie Glaude Jr. on MSNBC, one of their talking heads, he, of course, leans into that garbage rhetoric. We're selfish. We're greedy. We just love our guns. I heard Chris Hayes talk about how this is a white culture, gun ownership. Of course, they don't want to get anything done. Here's Eddie Glaude.
I think there are three elements. One is greed, the gun manufacturing industry, the gun lobby, NRA. The other is selfishness. I'm so selfish that I want my gun. I don't care. If this weapon of war is killing babies, I'm going to keep my AR-15.
Remember, when people say weapon of war, they're not actually talking about a weapon of war. Just FYI. An AR-15 is not a quote-unquote weapon of war. It would be an awful weapon in a war. It is not a weapon of war. What he really means to say is it's scary looking. That's what he means. When folks on the left talk about assault weapons and whatnot, they're talking about guns that are scary looking to them. And some of them are scary. If you don't understand guns, if you're uncomfortable around guns, which I understand, I get why you might be. But just know that going in.
And then there's indifference, greed, selfishness, and indifference. Indifference is that this is not going to touch me until it touches me.
Got it. You're so wise. You're so evolved. I'm going to take his approach to all constitutional rights. I'm going to do that the same way. You greedy people, and you think you have the right to vote? Ugh. You think you have the right to say that without being punished by the government? Ugh. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. On our weekly video, it's up right now at facebook.com/JasonRantsShow. I dive into the mass shooter out of Nashville and why the media doesn't seem all that interested in talking about the gender identity. Why is that? I explain on the video, brought to you by your local tax expert and advocate, Greg Nunn, at Nunn Better Tax Resolution. You're listening to The Jason Rantz Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rantz Show. We do have some breaking news. We have a verdict in the Gwyneth Paltrow ski trial in which a man named Terry Sanderson claimed that Gwyneth Paltrow left him with a, quote, permanent traumatic brain injury after she allegedly crashed into him from behind during a ski trip in Park City, Utah back in 2016. It was originally a $3.5 million lawsuit. It then, over the years, moved into a $300,000 negligence lawsuit. Gwyneth Paltrow countersues for a symbolic $1 because she said, this guy's just coming after me because I'm a celebrity. Well, a jury said Gwyneth Paltrow is right. She won the lawsuit. Terry Sanderson lost. And as I was going through some of the details, I generally stay away from any kind of just celebrity trial. I wasn't interested in Johnny Depp, Amber Heard. I don't understand people's fascination. And again, not that I'm around celebrities all that much, but I'm around higher profile people from time to time. And maybe I'm just used to it. That's the only thing I can think of as far as people's weird obsession with celebrity trials. I found myself sucked in a little bit in the sense that I was on TV talking about it, so I had to watch some of it. And it never made sense what Terry Sanderson was claiming. Let's say that everything he said is accurate. That would pose a little bit of a problem because he said he's got significant memory loss as a result of having a traumatic brain injury. So why would I consider you to be a witness who should be trusted? Not because you're lying, but because you're acknowledging that due to an injury that you suffered, you can't remember things. So why would I assume that you're remembering this correctly?
Yeah, that kind of seems like a major point, right?
It's a little bit of a conflict. Now, the funny thing is, Gwyneth Paltrow, when she testified, she had indicated that Terry Sanderson actually hit her from behind. And she remembered thinking to herself that this could have been something that was sexual in nature because her legs were being spread from behind and she heard a grunt from Terry Sanderson. That also didn't quite make sense to me because you got all of that in a nanosecond in which he plows into the back of you. It didn't quite work. But, and this is my bias. In fact, it's your bias that gives me a bias. People hate Gwyneth Paltrow. They hate her.
Why do they hate her?
They hate her because she's pretty, she's successful, and she's weird. She's got a candle that smells like her. Her stupid website, Goop, will sell you a paperweight that's a rock for $1,900, which I almost bought, I'm not going to lie.
That sounds like something you would buy.
Everything that she does in sort of that health and lifestyle space is just kind of insufferable. And it just reminds you of what you hate about elitists, regardless of whether or not you think she's a good actress, or which she's fine, I guess. I liked it when they cut open her head in what was the name of the movie? It was the pandemic movie that everyone watched after COVID, and it took on a different meaning, that movie. Why are you giving me that? How do you not know the name of that movie? It's like you've never even, you have no frame of reference for it. Contagion. How do you not
know that?
That's
what I said.
Oh, shut up. Such a liar. So
Contagion came out in 2011.
I know it came. I know when it came out. I'm not saying it came out recently. She was in it, and it's about basically COVID before, except it was a bat.
You said after the pandemic.
People watched it after the pandemic, and it took on new meaning. So the fact that people hate her so much made me start to like her. And I said this on Kennedy, and I made Lisa Kennedy smile and laugh after it. She did a little giggle. When you're told, for me, and this is my personality, when I'm told not to like something or do something or think something, whatever it is, you're pretty much pushing me to do exactly what you're telling me not to. That is just my personality. Don't say bomb in an airport makes me want to scream bomb in an airport. But I referenced on air, it's like the world's ugliest dog contest. You've got that freaking tongue hanging out of a weird bulging eye.
Whatever it is. Pug looking dogs.
It's not even a pug. It's like a chihuahua and a pug, but got hit by a truck and survived. And everyone's like, this is the ugliest dog ever. And it's always got that little like troll fur just on its head, but also one whisker and a mole over its eye. And it wins the world's ugliest dog contest. And I look at it and then I think to myself, but it's so cute. It's so ugly, it's cute. And you're telling me it's ugly. Now I think it's cute. That's how I feel about Gwyneth Paltrow. You're telling me to hate her. You're telling me that she's insufferable. And while I kind of agree she's insufferable, I don't hate her anymore. Now I like her. And so good for her. She won. That long way of saying she won the lawsuit.
Well, good for her.
She only gets a dollar? I think she also sued for lawyer fees, legal fees, I think. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.